From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. It is full on fall now. Days grow shorter, nights grow longer, and Hollywood brings a different stream of films to the Cineplex. Some big spectacles, yes, but also the Oscar contenders as we roll toward the holidays. We're looking at what's out, what's coming from new films from Christopher Nolan and Tim Burton, to the black comedy of Birdman, to slow-burning creepiness in Foxcatcher and Nightcrawler. This hour on Point, the end of the year in movies, what to see, what to skip. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What are you waiting for at the movies right now? What have you seen this fall that impressed you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us now from Middleburg, Virginia, where she's attending the Middleburg Film Festival, is Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post. Anne, it's great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Philadelphia is Carrie Rickey, longtime Philadelphia Inquirer film critic. She also contributes to Yahoo Movies, the San Francisco Chronicle, RogerEbert.com, and more. Carrie Rickey, wonderful to have you as well. Thanks for being here.
Howdy, Tom.
Hey, Anne, make us hip. I do not know about the Middleburg Film Festival. I am reading here in the Washington Post. It's a little town with one stoplight and no movie theater. So why a film festival?
Well, why not a film festival? I mean, it's Middleburg is joining this kind of burgeoning movement of regions and communities who are creating film festivals as destinations. Middleburg is horse country, as we know. It's been put on by Sheila Johnson, who built this beautiful, sprawling salamander resort.
This is the co-founder of Black Entertainment Television,
BET. Indeed, and a board member at Sundance and a huge film fan. So
okay.
She goes to Sundance every year, and she's very hip to the movie scene, and she and her programmers have put together a really lovely program of films, and it gathers people from the area who come. We watch either at the Salamander Resort or some of the community buildings in town. It's intimate. It's a lot of fun, and it's kind of a, like I said, it's an emerging model, I think, for, you know, as a way to get movies seen and build awareness in a cost-effective way.
But don't you see the same things people have seen at Sundance and Toronto and Cannes?
Sure, but the people who live around here don't go to, you know, if they don't go to those festivals, this is a chance for them to kind of get in at the beginning of a campaign for a movie that will probably go on to an awards campaign, and they can say, oh, I saw that, you know, I saw that in Middleburg. It's just a little, and they often get to meet the filmmaker, they see Q&A, so it's just
okay.
A little value added. It's a really warm and intimate way to experience films rather than just trudging to the multiplex.
No cinema in your lovely town? Find a billionaire and bring in a film festival.
Yeah.
Carrie Rickey, describe this movie season to us. Here we are. It's Halloween, end of October, and it does feel like the gears turn a little bit differently this time of year. What does Hollywood want to bring to us now?
Well, as you know, in Hollywood, summers are devoted to profit. Fall and winter are devoted to honor. So the prestige movies are coming in. And this season, the prestige movies seem to be two-tier. They're very big and effects-laden, like Interstellar from Christopher Nolan. Or they're small and quirky, like Iñárritu's Birdman with Michael Keaton, or Laggies, Lynn Shelton's movie starring Keira Knightley as a 29-year-old still stuck in her high school crowd and wanting to graduate. So I think that's what's happening.
So this is kind of when we go for honor, not so much for profit. You mentioned Interstellar. And just looking at a little bit of the trailer, I can't figure which this one is. I want to ask both of you about it, Carrie and Anne. But this is from Christopher Nolan. Matthew McConaughey plays Cooper, an astronaut who sets out into space to find a new home for humanity as Earth dies. Okay, they've got our attention. Michael Caine, Anne Hathaway also star. Here's a little bit.
You're the best pilot we ever had. Get out there and save the world.
Everybody ready to say goodbye to our solar system?
To our galaxy.
Here we go.
Interstellar. Anne Hornaday, I cannot tell from that and from the lineup if this is, you know, a big stuff or big hokum. What do you say, Anne? Dear Anne, are you there? Carrie, you tell me. What do you see coming here? I just can't read this.
Well, because Earth is ravaged, they need to find a way to get to another galaxy, and they find a wormhole, and they travel through the wormhole to another place. And I think one of the the big conflict is not only do you leave the planet, but I believe Matthew McConaughey is a single dad and he has to leave his kids to find this new planet.
Schmaltz so, or something special here, though? I just can't tell.
I have not seen it yet. I cannot tell you, but I know it's going to be beautifully produced, as all of Christopher Nolan movies are, and it's going to look beautiful. It has Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain, and Matthew McConaughey.
So we got a big lineup.
And that was Michael Caine's voice.
Yes, of course.
Unmistakably.
Unmistakably. And who knows what we'll find in that wormhole. We've got callers. We're going to get to a lot of films. Roger in Austin, Texas. Roger, thanks for calling. You're on with Carrie Rickey at the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Thanks, Tom. Happy to be here. I love your show. I think you're a great moderator.
Great. What do you see in the cinemas these days, Roger? What matters to you out there?
I grew up watching film. I love film. I am excited about the films that have been coming out lately, which I believe have been covered through a lot of NPR programs. Recently saw Dear White People, which was fantastic. Justin Simeon was in the theater, really breaching the racial tension, and not just racial tension, but self-identity tension.
Sure.
Whiplash, Birdman, which, watching the trailer, I have no idea what to expect, but I'm going to see that soon. As well as Whiplash, J.K. Simmons, and Michael Keaton, and Birdman, Edward Norton. I see some really good, really out there ideas. Something that sort of gets those of us who are maybe a little tired of just comic book movie after comic book movie. And so it's exciting. I think it's an exciting period of time.
Roger, can I ask you about Dear White People? And of course, this is the send up of an Ivy League school where all kinds of racial tensions are taken straight on in a pretty tough way. And I'm so curious, how did you see that? Did you see it? We've got everything in this country. Did you see that as a white person, a brown person, a black person? And does it matter where you come from, how you see that film?
I don't think you do. I watched it, and I'm a Mexican-American.
Okay.
I was in a master's program, and so I get the idea of sort of the racial tension among sort of getting higher and higher. You know, where are more minorities? Why aren't they in higher education? But beyond that, I think that you see a lot of the identity issues. How do you identify as a person in America, which can take all sorts of facets? I mean, Lionel Higgins, who's one of the characters, is black, but he likes, he talks about how he likes Mumford and Sons and Robert Altman films.
Right.
So I get that. I think that it very much speaks to everyone.
Yeah. Roger, I appreciate your call from Austin. Carrie, what about Dear White People? That's been out for a little bit now, but this is very young, a writer-director, Justin Simeon. What do you think of it?
I must regretfully say that I have not seen it yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it this weekend. From what I hear, it's fantastic. And I think identity politics are something that is really the experience of everyone in college these days. Who do you identify with?
The trailer is so saucy and so in your face. I mean, it seems just right for the times.
And
Anne, I hear you there. Good. We've got you out of the film festival.
She's back.
Yeah, she's back. Oh, good. What do you think, Anne?
I have had the pleasure of seeing Dear White People, and it's absolutely wonderful. I mean, Simeon has just struck exactly the right tone. It's playful, but it is just packed with ideas. It's very sophisticated, and like the caller said, it resonates. I think it'll resonate with so many viewers. It's just been done in a beautiful spirit, and it's fun.
An inclusive spirit, I understand.
Indeed, absolutely, and just it seems like it's made from a place of bemused perplexment rather than outrage. Although there's outrage in it, and rightfully so, but it's just it's really a tonal masterpiece in terms of just striking just that right note.
It sure looked that way to me from the trailer. I can't wait to get to it. We've got a lot of movies to look at, but here's a listener online says it's hard to believe that people are still forking out money for movie tickets, renting movies, or buying DVDs when they can watch it all online for free. What about going to the cinema? Is that even in the same ballpark as it used to be in terms of what people simply do, Carrie?
Well, this is purely anecdotal, but I have two daughters, and they are what we call platform neutral. They'd rather sit at home and watch it on DVD.
Mine too.
Or download. And they like going to the movies. I mean, they love seeing Christopher Nolan movies in, you know, the big auditoriums with, you know, all the effects. And they very much decide, oh, well, I'll wait to see that in a movie theater, or we can see that at home when you get your screeners for the holidays. And I just always scratch my head and I, don't you want to see people who are larger than life?
No, curl up with a laptop and you can take the movies anywhere.
Oh, how about those kids watching it on their cell phones?
Yeah,
My goodness.
Hey, kids these days. But they watch movies however they get to them. We're going to look at a big lineup of fall and into the holiday movies in this hour. A little Birdman soundtrack behind us. We'll talk about that one. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the end-of-year movie rush, the big, serious films moving in for Oscar time, and the rest, too, movies for cold days and the holidays. Anne Hornaday is with us, movie critic for The Washington Post, with us from Middleburg, Virginia today. They've got a festival going on down there, a film festival. Carrie Rickey is here, longtime film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Let's see, Anne, I've got Amy writing to us here, must see Birdman. Well, maybe, Carrie, I'll go to you with that. I see that right at the top of your list and high on yours as well, Anne. Why Birdman? Carrie, tell us about it. What is it?
Well, it's a very funny inside Hollywood satire of an actor who was famous playing superheroes and he wants to be serious, so he's directing a Broadway play. And since Michael Keaton is known as, you know, the first modern Batman,
yeah,
and we see his character struggling with his superhero past and trying to be kind of an ordinary guy in the present, there's that conflict. It's a critique of all these big fat superhero movies and of Broadway ego, and you played that wonderful percussion score before by a Mexican jazz artist whose name I can't remember.
That would be Antonio Sanchez.
Gracias. And it's great. It's funny. And Keaton is always wonderful.
Here's a little bit from Birdman. It premiered October 17th, directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. Stars Michael Keaton as Regan Thompson, a washed-up Hollywood actor famed for playing superhero Birdman. To revive his career, he directs and stars in a play on Broadway. In this scene, members of the press interview Regan about the project.
Are you at all afraid that people will say you're doing this play to battle the impression that you're a washed-up superhero?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's why 20 years ago I said no to Birdman 4.
Birdman 4!
Thank you, everybody.
You do Birdman 4!
Thank you for coming out. Thank you. We're expecting some great pieces.
And Hornaday, I see this high on your list as well. You're a washed-up superhero. What do you think of Birdman in?
I was just really taken with it, and I have to say I have been rather skeptical of Iñárritu's work in the past. I found him a little bit ponderous and a little, you know, there's been a lot of style.
Miserabilism?
Miserabilism,
yes. Well,
okay. Les Mis by another name.
You know, but in the name of kind of very little by way of ideas, mm-hmm. But this one is just so exhilarating. I mean, it's just fun to watch because he does it in the seemingly one take. So it's just it's a ride visually, and it gets to something, you know, really real in terms of anxieties about aging, anxieties about encroaching technology, and sort of, you know, I related to that as a middle-aged person. So I think it's really kind of getting to something kind of true about the culture, but in a very playful way. And I love the magic realism and the performance.
We've got people right on down here looking at this lineup. Mari writes to us, the two new movies that I really want to see are Foxcatcher and Inherent Vice. Foxcatcher because of the lurid, true story involving a murderous DuPont heir. We'll talk about that. And the latter, Inherent Vice, because I loved reading Thomas Pynchon's retro-noir novel. Foxcatcher, what, out November, the story of the multimillionaire John DuPont murdered Olympic wrestling champion David Schultz in 1996 for real. DuPont's played by Steve Carroll, most unrecognizable in this role. Lots of makeup here. And here's a scene where Mark Schultz, David Schultz's brother, fellow wrestling champ, played by Channing Tatum, travels to DuPont's house, kind of in the woods, where DuPont introduces himself.
I'm a wrestling coach. And I have a deep love, the sport of wrestling. And I wanted to speak with you about your future, about what you hope to achieve. What do you hope to achieve, Mark?
Oh, this one, just the trailer creeped me out. Anne Hornaday, tell us about this film.
It is creepy. I mean, it's of course based on that real life tale of John DuPont, and Steve Carell just transforms himself physically and temperamentally to play this very bizarre fellow. And he's great, but it's such a terrific ensemble piece with him and Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo, each of whom just delivers spectacular performances. It's a very unsettling movie. It's not a feel good movie by any stretch. I mean, it's one that, you know, I can't as a critic just sort of send people to with a big smile on my face and say, you're just going to love it. But it's just a magnificently crafted piece, and it just gets right to your, it's unresolved in the most sort of haunting way.
The trailer had me really shuddering. I don't know if I'm headed out for that one or not, but yeah, they're sending up some kind of vibe there. Inherent Vice, this is out early December, adaptation of the Thomas Pynchon novel. Director Paul Thomas Anderson, set in 1970s L.A., stars Joaquin Phoenix as private investigator Doc Sportello, tracking down a missing ex-girlfriend who's become involved with shady developer L.A., Mickey Wolfman. Here's a little bit from the film's trailer. Inherent Vice, Thomas Pynchon on the big screen.
Michael Z. Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
Has vanished.
So where would I find him?
He's technically Jewish, but wants to be a Nazi.
And a girl don't necessarily want to get into difficulties with those folks.
That sounds very Pynchon-y. It's also very Paul Thomas Anderson style here. He keeps coming at L.A. from new angles. Remind us of that, Carrie.
Well, I mean, whether it was the beginnings of the oil industry in There Will Be Blood, the beginnings of the porn industry in Boogie Nights, or the beginnings of Scientology in, oh my goodness.
The Master.
Master,
yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yeah. Paul Thomas Anderson really gets the guts and the heart of Los Angeles, where I am from,
Yeah. And
it's very recognizable. This is the first Pynchon novel to ever be adapted to the screen, and I believe Pynchon wrote it in 89, but it's set in the 70s. It's from Joaquin Phoenix, who worked with Anderson so beautifully in The Master.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really looking forward to it. And it was sold out at the New York Film Festival, so I didn't get to see it. And I have to wait another 2 weeks.
Why do you think we've waited so long for a Thomas Pynchon novel to make it? Are they just too fractured?
I think they're too literary.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess. I'm very interested in seeing that. I mean, he's believed to be unadaptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a reading experience rather than a visual experience. But who's to say? Has Anne seen it?
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen it, Anne.
No, it's absolutely just top on my list. I just cannot wait. I'm so curious.
I mean, Boogie Nights and There Will Be Blood and The Master, this is quite a trail he's carved out here.
And Magnolia.
A Magnolia,
and
yes.
Magnolia, oh my goodness, yeah. And I just, I have to say, as much as huge a fan as I am of Paul Thomas Anderson, The Master did leave me a little cold. I mean, I wasn't sure that, as impressive as those performances were and as just as strong as his vision is, I just didn't feel like I really got enough from it ultimately to love it. But I just think he is one of our greatest auteurs. And the combination of him with Pynchon and, again, in L.A. again is just delicious to contemplate.
Can we talk about some films that are focused on people, on names that people will know? One of them, a documentary, Citizen Four. It's on your list of must-sees, Anne Hornaday. And this, of course, is focused on the man who broke open the NSA global surveillance story. Tell us about Citizen Four.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's by Laura Poitras, who was one of the journalists/film. You know, she's a filmmaker, but she was approached by Snowden with his revelations because he had followed her work. She has been making movies about post 9/11 security America. She did a film called My Country, My Country, and then The Oath. So he was aware of that. Approached her. And when they first met with Glenn Greenwald, she very presciently and appropriately brought a camera and asked him if she could film their encounter in this Hong Kong hotel room where he divulged what he knew. Thankfully, he said yes, and this is the result, which is it unfolds like a real-time thriller, you know, with this spy almost, you know, saying, spilling what he knows. And granted, this is an unabashedly sympathetic portrayal of Snowden. There's no doubt what mm-hmm. side, you know, whose side she's on.
Yep.
But I would argue that regardless of how you feel about him, it's just necessary viewing. I mean, it humanizes him. I think it clarifies a lot of what his motivations were. It clarifies him as a human being, and it's just a fascinating real-time portrait of somebody doing what he did and what it looks like and how it feels in this little cramped hotel. It's incredibly atmospheric, and it's just a fascinating movie.
Citizen
and
Four.
It's a movie
yes,
about right to privacy that everyone can connect with.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny, you know, in a way, I was talking about Birdman earlier. I mean, there have been this sort of, you know, now we're starting, you know, film is a lagging indicator of society just because it takes so long to make them. So I think we're seeing a lot of movies this season, Men, Women, and Children being another one, that are grappling with technology, privacy, predation, protection, all of these issues, Birdman being one of them too. So it's just fascinating to see how people are working through these issues in film.
Citizen Four, the documentary on Edward Snowden, Laura Poitras. Of course, she was there in that hotel room with Glenn Greenwald when the NSA runaway first brought his stuff, and Steven Soderbergh, one of the co-producers here, no mean filmmaker. A couple of others here. The Theory of Everything looks at Stephen Hawking. The Imitation Game looks at Alan Turing, great mathematician right there in the original guts of the computer. I don't know if you've seen either of those, Carrie, or have something to say about them. Those are big names, Hawking and Turing, in the science world.
Well, one of the reasons we are seeing so many movies about real-life people, like Steve Carell as John DuPont, mm-hmm. and this season we'll see David Oyelowo as Martin Luther King in Selma. We're going to see Christoph Waltz and Amy Adams as the Keens, the painters of the wide-eyed, sentimental children.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, 8 of the last 10 Best Actor winners played real-life characters, and 8 out of the last 14 Best Actress winners did the same. It's very clear that when actors who play real-life people are getting rewarded for it. And sparked by this information, I just checked, did the numbers yesterday. In Oscar history, 25% of the best actors and 21% of the best actresses played biographical figures. Mm-hmm. So go figure.
So the odds are good. Find someone rich to play and play them to the hilt.
Yeah.
We've got St. Vincent here high on your list, Carrie. Tell us about that. Bill Murray.
Well, I'm not crazy about it, I have to confess. It's Bill Murray is a very cantankerous guy who babysits a young boy with a single mother. He babysits this young boy after school and teaches him how to be a man.
This sounds very familiar.
Well, it sounds a little Gran Torino, except Bill Murray's a little bit more debauched and dissolute than Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
And I, much as I love Bill Murray, I was taken aback at its sentimentality. It tried to be unsentimental, but in a very sentimental way.
Yeah, I don't know how you get around it with that kind of structure. It's just got to be sentimental. Bill Murray does that in his own way.
Usually, Bill Murray does a really good job at not being sentimental.
It's true, but put you in this situation where you're taking care of a kid, you got to show him how to be a man.
Yeah,
I don't know how you get away from it. Anne, what else are you looking for this season?
Well, you mentioned Big Eyes. That's another really, that's very high on my list, in terms of being curious about that. There's, you know,
that's Tim Burton's. What's he up to, Tim Burton, this time?
I guess it's a biopic about the painter Margaret Keane, who made those very sentimental life portraits.
Oh, you're giving away the plot.
Well.
Oh, I am. I'm sorry.
Oh, dear.
I hate doing that. But you know, interestingly, another theme that we're seeing this fall, especially with Gone Girl, is marriage. You know, kind of the commitment agonistes. And there's a wonderful Swedish movie coming up in a couple of weeks called Force Majeure. I saw it at Cannes.
Oh, my God.
And it was just the most exhilarating, refreshing, bracing experience. I can't speak of it highly enough.
Force Majeure. This gets way into marriage and deep parts of that ocean relationship.
Oh,
the deep
yeah.
parts of that avalanche.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. It's observant. It's tense. You don't know where it's going to go. It really enchanted me. I was very beguiled by it.
Is it subtitles? Force Majeure, Swedish?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's visually, it is absolutely stunning. And as Carrie said, there is just this set piece involving a family at a ski resort in an avalanche that is absolutely breathtaking. It's just what it's. And again, that's the kind of thing you can't see on an iPhone. You know, you really want to be in a big screen theater to see this because it's absolutely stunning.
Go and check it out.
It's very
Majeure.
Funny, but not in a funny way.
It's Swedish after all. I got a little bit here from the theory of everything. Forgive me, Carrie. We're up against the clock a little bit. This comes out November 7th. Tells the story of the young life of physicist Stephen Hawking and his then wife Jane. In this scene, he's played by Eddie Redmayne. Hawking flirts with Jane, played by Felicity Jones, at a party. This is before he's the Stephen Hawking that we know now. You know, talking through a computer.
You see how the men's shirt fronts and the bow ties, how they glow more than the women's dresses.
Yes.
Do you know why?
Why?
Tide.
The washing powder.
The fluorescence in the washing powder is caught by the UV light.
Why do you know that?
Why do you know that? Stephen Hawking, curiosity is deep. Alan Turing, what he in this film, The Imitation Game, he's got kind of a beard, or he's gay but can't be out at his time. Either of these make your Let's Go See It lists, Carrie, Ann?
Well,
oh,
I'm
sure.
Very
I'll
interested.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are, to Carrie's point about biopics, you know, they're very much in that tradition. They're also, you know, in a funny way, I can see them seen by through one lens. They kind of hew to the great man theory of, you know, that Paul Muni tradition of great man biopics. But then each of them kind of plays with that in a way. Theory of Everything, again, gets to the heart of their marriage. It's very much about their relationship, and it doesn't take the traditional direction. Felicity Jones, I think, delivers a really poignant performance as this woman who, you know, chafes against being that sort of subservient helpmeet and tries to find her own way in an ethical and honorable way. So, and it's beautifully directed by James Marsh, who did the great documentary Man on Wire. I mean, it's just it's a really kind of expressive movie visually. And The Imitation Game, you know, with Benedict Cumberbatch, terrific performance. Also kind of an unconventional relationship with a character played by Keira Knightley, who is a woman making her way in the world of computer science.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the end-of-year movie rush 2014, the big serious films moving in for Oscar time, and the rest, too, movies for cold days and the holidays coming up. Carrie Rickey is with us from the Philadelphia Inquirer, film critic there. Anne Hornaday is a critic for the Washington Post, joins us from Middleburg, Virginia, where the Middleburg Film Festival's been going on. And, Carrie, let's call us here. Katya in Germantown, Wisconsin. Katya, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me on your program.
Sure. What are you looking for?
I am looking forward to the movie Unbroken, directed by Angelina Jolie. I think it's just such an inspiring story. It's one of those true stories. I'm sure it'll get an Oscar nod. Looks like a good cast, too.
World War II story, Unbroken, Angelina Jolie directing. Carrie, what can you tell us about it?
Well, I've read the Laura Hillenbrand's book about it, and it's astonishing. It's the story of Louis Zamperini, who is an Olympic track runner, who then in World War II, he's on a raft for 48 days and barely survives. And then he spends, he's rescued, and he spends 2.5 years in Japanese POW camps as the war is winding down and there's less and less food. It's this incredible drama of resilience and vigilance and an inspirational, and I hope that Jolie can do the book justice.
It was a very, very powerful book. Lots of people's heads turned by that. Jackie in Brattleboro, Vermont. Jackie, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. We're actually preparing right now for our film festival here, the Brattleboro Film Festival.
Bravo.
It's our third annual.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We're doing.
Is it at that wonderful theater downtown?
It is. It is at the Lashes. We have wonderful support from the Lashes Theater. And
I love that theater.
And hotel.
What are you showing that we should know about at the festival, Jackie?
Well, we try to bring what wouldn't be seen otherwise in Brattleboro. That's part of our mission. The other part of our mission is to bring kids to the theater. You spoke about that earlier.
Yep.
So we have a wonderful film selection committee, and one person takes care of trying to gather up the films for the young people. And another person takes care of trying to get it to them. So we have the Young Film Makers Contest.
Name one film that you're showing that we'd be interested in, Jackie.
Yes. Well, we have so many, but Pride is opening tonight, which is a really good feel-good movie about the 1984 National Union of Mine Workers strike that was supported by a London-based group that was in Wales, and it was supported by a London-based group of gay and lesbian activists. We have several movies that are feel-good and several that are about political history. We have 1971, which is about the break-in of the FBI offices. We have The Overnighters, which is about the men who went to the North Dakota oil fields and pretty much got abandoned up there and had to be, you know, where they were homeless.
Jackie, we've got it. That's a pretty good list right there already. We've got more to get to, but the Brattleboro Film Festival with Pride. This is the mine workers' strike supported by gay and lesbian supporters in the UK. I heard some affirming sounds there. Anne, do you know it?
Yes, I have a crush on this movie. I can't think of a nicer way to kick off a festival because I got to see it. It's always fun. Sometimes critics, as Carrie knows, sometimes we go to press screenings, sometimes where we're just sitting with other cynical critics like ourselves. Sometimes we see things on DVD or even on link, but sometimes we get to see them with audiences. And I got to see Pride with an audience. And it is a crowd pleaser. It is just such, it's almost mounted like a musical. And it's about this kind of, you know, really inspiring, heartening case of political partnership with a real bittersweet undertone to it because, of course, this was also the era of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of mournful sense of loss, but mostly it's just a really inspiring, very positive, really crowd-pleasing little movie. Dominic West is in it. It's just got a terrific cast, Bill Nighy, Imelda Staunton. It's just a lot of fun and also deeply meaningful. And the other two, those documentaries that she mentioned, came to our festival, the AFI Docs in Washington this past summer, and hugely popular and really, really good. So it sounds like Brattleboro's got a terrific program.
I've got another film out of the UK here, Laggies, L-A-G-G-I-E-S, came out last week, directed by Lynn Shelton.
Oh, it's out of Seattle, actually.
Seattle. Oh, okay, forgive me. But you got Keira Knightley as Megan, a 28-year-old, as a crisis, decides to hang out for a week with 16-year-old Annika, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, and her father Craig, played by Sam Rockwell. Here's a bit from the trailer.
Dad, you're supposed to knock.
Wow, high school students are looking rougher and rougher these days.
Who are you?
It's kind of hard to explain.
Hey, did you hear the one about the grown woman who started hanging out with a bunch of pubescent kids?
No, what?
No, I'd never heard of it before either.
Okay, we've got it planted in Seattle, the right place. What, is this a failure to launch kind of thing, or what do we have here, Carrie?
It's more interesting. It's about Keira Knightley, who's playing an American very well, I might say.
Uh-huh.
It's very touching. It's about this young woman who's been hanging out with the same high school crowd, and they define her, and they think of her as one way. And she's beginning to think of herself as another way. And when she's supposed to be doing one thing, she gets involved, and she goes back to high school and starts hanging out with high schoolers. And she is realizing her own maturity as she's counseling these high schoolers, and she kind of wants to be a psychologist. And this is her first actual experience doing psychology, and it's charming. I like it very much. And Lynn Shelton is an independent filmmaker from Seattle. You may have seen Hump Day or My Sister's Sister.
Yes.
And I liked it. It's very small and very rewarding.
I mean, we've got this indie versus blockbuster divide you've talked about, macro versus micro budget. And
exactly.
So Laggy's on the small side of that spectrum.
Yeah.
It featured, for me, a revelatory performance from Sam Rockwell, who comes into his own as a romantic leading man here. I mean, I've never necessarily thought of him as sexy or hot or anything, but he is so magnetic and,
it's funny.
It's just hilarious. And he's got that deadpan style, but he's really, you know, there's a lot of chemistry between them that's just lovely to watch and fun to experience vicariously.
I've got a little bit here from Beyond the Lights. This is a romance between a conflicted young star, Noni Jean, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and Kaz Nichols, police officer, political ambitions, played by Nate Parker. Here's a scene from that trailer. Kaz saves Noni from committing suicide by leaping from a balcony.
Everybody says I'm special because I have this voice, but I'm just saying what everybody else wants me to say.
Can you look at me for a second?
Hey, look at me!
I see you.
Beyond the Lights. Is this the Bodyguard kind of story, Carrie, or what?
Oh, no. It's more a stage mother. Minnie Driver is Gugu Mbatha-Raw's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And a stage mom pushing her daughter to the brink of stardom and collapse. And it's actually more like those 1940s melodramas like The Hard Way with Ida Lupino pushing her sister Joan Leslie into the business. I really enjoyed it. And it's by Gina Prince Bythewood, who directed the wonderful Love and Basketball. Mm-hmm. And she's a really great writer and director. See it.
Okay. Speaking of movies that might not come out in the summertime, Mr. Turner. This is another biographical drama about, of course, the great painter J.M.W. Turner. This is from director Mike Lee. Anne, have you seen it?
I did. I saw at least the first half hour, the first hour at Cannes, and it's actually playing down here in Middleburg, and I'm hoping to catch it in full. It's absolutely beautiful. Timothy Spall, the great British actor who works frequently with Mike Lee, the director, plays Turner and is this kind of, you know, misanthropic, turtle-like guy who's trying to kind of break painting open. And you just see him, you know, at one point lash himself to the mast of a ship just to get that kind of sea foam and figure out how to recreate that on the canvas. And for me, the great kind of draw of this movie is that it's beautifully shot by Lee's cinematographer Dick Pope to almost resemble a Turner painting in itself. I mean, the way that the movie is composed and framed and filmed, it resembles a Turner picture, and it kind of puts you into the picture in just a really mesmerizing, genius way. So I think people are really going to enjoy this.
Wonderful. Stephen in Detroit, Michigan. Stephen, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I just had a quick comment about Whiplash. I haven't seen the movie, but from the trailers, it looks like a very blown up version of reality. I'm a drummer making a living here in Detroit, and I went to university for music, and I know people who went to North Texas, like in the movie. And my story and my friends' stories are so dissimilar to what is portrayed in the movie.
This is with the sort of demonically driven drumming teacher who just goes to town with this kid who has very ambitious himself. We talked with the director of that film. We had people calling in saying, well, I had a teacher like that or I had a coach like that. Maybe not in your experience, Stephen. Carrie, Anne, have you seen Whiplash?
Yeah,
I hear. Go on.
Sorry. Anne, please. Sorry.
Well, this movie, I have seen it, and it's gotten just rave reviews. I was not one of those rave reviews, largely because of the point Steve brings up. I just didn't, you know, the teacher character is in that tradition of the hard-driving drill sergeant or coach or teacher who, you know, breaks you down to build you back up. And I just felt like that trope didn't work for me, and especially the way that it resolved at the end, I didn't buy for 1 minute. I just didn't, at the end of the day, I guess I just didn't really believe it. But I will say the music is fantastic. I loved the actual tunes that they played, if they managed to finish them, because he would always stop them. And the performances are absolutely full out, you know, so I have to give all the credit to Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons for two absolutely committed to the wall performances. But yeah, I have to agree with the caller that it didn't work for me on that level.
I've got to ask you both about another music-centered film, Into the Woods. Sondheim, of course, this is coming out, I think, in December. Walt Disney Pictures will bring it out. I don't know if anyone's seen anything from this yet, but I know lots of people anticipating it in a big way. Carrie, what do you know about this production?
Well, I certainly saw Into the Woods on Broadway.
Yeah, and
it's magical. I mean, imagine this universe of Grimm Brothers characters, Jack and the Beanstalk, Rapunzel, Riding Hood, Cinderella. They interact and musically go into the fearful woods, deal with their conflicts, and find a way out. And it's very not Disney.
They produce it. Rob Marshall directing. You got Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt and Chris Pine and Johnny Depp and a whole lot more. Just an amazing cast.
And Anna Kendrick.
Anna Kendrick. Yes, let us not forget. What are people expecting from the treatment here?
Well, you know, I think people are a little bit on tenterhooks just because, as Carrie said, this isn't Disney and there probably will be major changes, you know, because it's pretty dark. Although I've also read that, you know, Sondheim, maybe surprisingly, is pretty elastic in terms of people changing his role. I don't think he's not a taskmaster. I mean, I think he's pretty forgiving for people who want to adapt things to make them more palatable to younger people or different audiences. So my sense is that it will undergo some pretty big changes from the actual stage production. But I just, you know, speaking of Anna Kendrick, a movie starring her opened this festival last night, The Last 5 Years, which is an adaptation of the off-Broadway musical, and she is absolutely enchanting in it. This will open early in 2015, but put that on your list because it's just wonderfully made.
We will do it. You two will not be the only critics when Into the Wood comes out. Everybody in their seat will be taking the measure of that. Doug in Oklahoma City. Doug, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to talk about a film that was actually made here called Rudderless, and it's William H. Macy's directorial debut.
Okay.
And whenever a film or something big is going on in Oklahoma, everybody seems to jump on board. So I was a little skeptical about how good it was going to be because they kind of don't step back to take a look at it sometimes.
This is about a father whose son is killed in a school shooting.
Yeah, and then he finds his son's music and ends up forming a local band and singing his son's songs and becomes kind of a local celebrity through his son's music. And it deals with the school shooting, the subject of it, in a different way. And I thought it was very brave of them to do that. And I've seen it twice now, and I was very pleased with it. I thought it was fantastic. Critics seem to be mixed on it, but audiences absolutely love this movie.
We've got it, Rudderless. So William H. Macy's directorial debut made there in Oklahoma. It's Halloween. We can't ignore. Thank you, Doug. Nightcrawler, out today. Jake Gyllenhaal plays Lou Bloom, freelance cameraman, sells grisly footage to local television stations. Here's a scene where Lou, told by TV producer played by Rene Russo, what the station's looking for.
Just crime.
No. Accidents, Clay. Cars, buses, trains, planes, fires.
A bloody.
Well, graphic. The best and clearest way that I can phrase it to you, Lou, to capture the spirit of what we air, is think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
I understand.
Oh, great. And back we go. That and a lot more. Selma takes us back to the Montgomery voting rights marches. We will look for that. The Babadook. This is another horror film. Carrie, what is it?
It's a first film by a young woman named Jennifer Kent, who also wrote it. Single mom taking care of her child who has an imaginary friend called the Babadook. And maybe it's not so imaginary a friend because the spirit of the Babadook and weird things start happening in the house.
We're creeped out. What's your sense of how this season is shaping up? Do we have a a strong award, you know, Oscar contender season coming together here, Carrie, or something else?
I think we certainly have a great Best Actor and Best Actress lineups from what I've seen so far.
And Anne, well, what's your sense of the whole, Anne?
I think so, too, and I wanted, in Boyhood, a movie that opened over the summer is still really leading the pack in terms of a sure thing Best Picture nominee. Rightfully so, it's a masterpiece. I just can't say enough about it. It's wonderful.
This is the one filmed over many years, so you see everybody, including the boy, age.
Exactly.
Right. It's 13 years.
It's magnificent.
Boyhood and a whole lot more. You guys are great to come on and give us a little sense of what's coming from the other side of the curtain. Anne Hornaday with The Washington Post today in Middleburg, Virginia. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you.
And Carrie Rickey, film critic at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Carrie, you're just wonderful for being with us. Thanks so much, Carrie.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Anne. See you at the movies.
See you at the movies. Happy viewing, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.